Hello, everyone, and welcome to our Sequester podcast. I'm your host, Jaren Armstrong, and with me today is Brent. How you doing, Brent?
I'm doing freaking wonderful, Taryn. I am so happy to be here. I could just pop a tit. I don't know about you.
You know what? The last time on the podcast, when you called me a puss-ass bitch, I was like, man, I gotta come back at ya.
Exactly. I think that's something we can all relate to, Taryn.
I don't know if I heard the word puss.
Yeah, didn't we? I'm pretty sure we did. Yeah, he called him a. Or did you, like, maybe I'm speaking out of turn here. Did you replay it and, like, you know? I actually don't know if he did say puss.
I don't know. I mean, I know he said it in this episode. I don't know if he said it in the previous episode is what I'm getting at. But, yes, we are here to talk about episode 3 of season 3. Of Sequester, and it was an interesting one. We got no elimination.
No elimination, but I found this to be, and I haven't talked to you about this episode. I did text you, but it was a very short text that I feel as though we are finally to the meat of the bone in this season. That I felt like the first two episodes were a lot of foreplay, a lot of character development, a lot of not a lot of storyline, I felt like. Not a lot of, like, I didn't understand the alliances. I didn't understand who's working together and why. And I take the point that this has only been a day in real time. So, like, the first two episodes were all in one day. That's like, they'd literally been there for one day when the first two episodes took place. So, there is that to be said. But now the contestants have been there for two nights because they got there on, like, you know, what I would call day zero, where they just got to know each other, but there was no actual gameplay happening. And then they had two cycles on day one, and now we're into day two. So they've been there for two full nights. I mean, like, Taryn, honey, like, Hunter and Erica have already broken up by this point and are in two separate beds, I think, because Erica was in the girls' room and Hunter was, like, I mean, so, like, that alliance wasn't worth the paper it was printed on. But, yeah, I feel like that now we're actually moving the story ahead. I was very, very happy with this episode, so much so that I wanted to do a live tweet about it and just tell everybody my thoughts as we went along, because I was really flummoxed about what was going to happen. I wasn't sure. At first, I was sure what was going to happen, but then as I saw the story develop, I was like, maybe I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe, like, I'm going to get the rug pulled out from under me. I felt like it was a Survivor episode where we know who the boot is. There's, like, it's like a, you know, majority of lines of, like, 8-2. We know who's going to get the boot. But then, like, all of a sudden the producers introduced this red herring, and I'm like, is it a red herring or are they going to get the boot? Like, I just want to know, like, does this idea that Drew and Erica could possibly go home, does it have legs, or is it going to be the obvious boot in Dina and Brayden? And we got our answer.
We certainly did. I am getting a little bit of connection jumpiness from you. But,
wonderful. You know how I love that.
Yeah. yes, for sure. This was definitely the second that it was announced that they were going to be split into pairs. I was like, OK, this is probably going to be an easier episode to follow because there is a smaller amount of votes that are going to be cast. And, you know, because they're going to be, you know, voting in blocks, it'll be easier to tell who's where and what they're doing. I don't know for sure if I got that, but it was, I think, easier to tell a story, which is definitely one that we got here, which was basically that Brayden and Dina kind of got screwed on a team together and were the easy vote. And that was then Brayden's attempts to throw this vote off of himself somehow, some way, ultimately, though, ending in failure.
Yeah, ending in failure. By the way, I'm going to call my internet company this week because I've had it up to here, Taryn, with these issues with my internet. But
you're
going to
call them up
that,
and you're going to be like, hey, it's not Brent anymore. It's Mayhem. Mayhem is what it is.
Mayhem. Yes, that's how they say it, apparently. Well, actually, Kevin's from Cincinnati. He's like from my hometown. So come on, like, what is mayhem? It's not mayhem. Anyways, I'm over it. So the point, yes, I agree with you. The storytelling, I thought, was more effective this episode. And maybe that's where I'm coming from, because I really felt great watching these, that I finally got a sense of who was working with who and like where potentially the story could move forward. I get a sense of who the cast views as their big threats. I got a sense of who they view as expendable. I got a sense of who really trusts who and who is just faking trusting someone. Like, I thought that Jayla was really liked by everybody, but apparently Tori really doesn't care for her and wants her out, like yesterday. Erica, I felt like, was liked by more people than maybe I gave her credit for. And then we find out that Tori and Cameron really don't like her. In fact, Tori, who do you like? I don't know. It all comes back to Tori. She just doesn't
Miss
like
Genuine
people.
Is right. So genuine with everyone she interacts with.
So genuine, in fact. Yes. Well, before the twist happens, we had a battle match to resolve, because somebody got their wish last week. They wanted to be pulled into a battle match, and they got pulled into a battle match by Matt when he said he's going to fulfill Jay West's wish and pull him and Kevin, the pussy-ass bitch, into a battle match. And I, as I said last week, I was rooting for Kevin because I felt like that Jay West played so abysmally that he deserved to be eliminated. And you shared my view on that. And I was really psyched to see what would happen here. So how did you feel about this battle match in general? And I also want to ask you, as a video editor yourself, about the editing choices that Audrey made in terms of just showing the first two rounds and then giving us like 5 to 7 minutes of strategizing and conversation before she ultimately revealed who went home here.
Yeah, I was skeptical going in, but I actually feel like the editing choice was a big thing here, because I feel like the competition itself, I don't know if it played out the way that they hoped it would. They mentioned like the ball's in the middle there for a shield. I don't know if they expected them to lie there, if they expected this to go on longer than it did, but these rounds were essentially just like, like ended in a second. In fact, I was eating dinner as I was watching, and I looked up and it said Jordan won round one. I was like, wait, what? When did round one happen? I was still hearing the rules. And so I had to rewind. And so it was going very quickly. So I actually felt like the way that they ended up doing this worked out, because to see the third round right after the first two would have just been a third, like over in a second, like kind of anticlimactic. I feel like the editing saved this, that they cut away, they got back, they actually managed to bring in a little bit of suspense where previously it was just like, wait, what's happening? And then they cut back and showed the previous round. I thought that was good. I was afraid that we weren't going to see it at all. And so actually I liked this. I thought this was an editing choice that kind of saved a kind of maybe quicker, less satisfying than they anticipated challenge.
Yeah, and I don't know that that's what Audrey was thinking when she edited it this way, but I know that it was a conscious choice on her part. I wonder, maybe she was thinking that a majority of the audience, in fact, I saw a few polls that like it was like 72% were rooting for Jay West here, just because Kevin is a little bit of a villain, and they like the craziness that Jordan brings to the screen. So maybe she thought that our hero was going to die in a horrible death here, but I never viewed Jordan as much of a hero myself, so I was happy to see him go, and I was like on pins and needles waiting to see the results of this. In fact, when he came around the corner, I couldn't tell who it was because he was running so fast. I was like, is that, and I was watching on my phone at work, I was like, is that oh, it's him, yay, Kevin's back, all right, this is gonna be fun. Jay West, girl, bye, have some humble pie. And oh, I'm a poet and I didn't even know it, Taryn. So.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I was, you know, again, it was all Jordan's fault that he was there in the first place.
Yep.
Jay West, I should call him. And so, you know, he got that first point and like watching Kevin throw, because I was just like, obviously you just run, grab the ball and just toss it over, because the other person's going to be running in too. But he just like totally whiffs it and throws it to the side.
Whip. Threw it like a girl, man. I'm just saying.
All right, well.
You don't have to co-sign that. That was terrible. Like, what were you thinking, Kevin? By the way, I also thought that there was an underutilized strategy of this battle match where you could pick up the small ball, because I had kids do this to me in dodgeball in school, where they would use the small ball as a shield. Like, mm-hmm. even though you could use the big ball as a shield, but you couldn't use the big ball to hit people. So, like, just use the small ball as a shield and kind of, like, hold it in front of you until they, like, throw theirs, and then just take a good shot at them. In fact, I would do, like, the fake out and let them jump, and then when they're coming back down, then hit them. So...
Yeah, it seems like Jay West's strategy here was to be patient and let Kevin throw first. And that worked in the first round, but in the second and the third rounds, it did not work. And so, my initial thought was, don't even bother with blocking at all. Really, just run straight up, grab a ball, and don't even just, like, throw like that. Just grab it and just... chuck it over, like just you don't even have to throw it, just kind of like lightly, like boop, he's right there, he's probably bent over, he's probably not defending himself. So I would run, grab both, throw one, dive to the side in anticipation of one hitting me.
Oh my god, it's like an action movie with you, Taryn.
I don't know, that's just my dodgeball strategy there. Ultimately we see Kevin come back and he is on a tear. Like, he is pumped up with adrenaline, like he just came off of this challenge, even though it happened the night before and he got like a whole night's rest. I don't know why he's so pumped up right now.
I think just excited to show them that, yeah, I wasn't bamboozled by Jay West and I'm still here and you're still going to have to deal with me. I really thought he missed an opportunity to come back in with the Make America Great Again shirt on. Like, I thought he was going to do that. Yeah, I really thought, like, after you got called out as a pussy ass bitch and you went in the battle match and you didn't want to and you're mad about it and Matt stabbed you in the back, then, like, I felt like you won the battle match and it's been a night and they're like, the drama, Kevin, the drama, we need the drama. And then you don't wear the shirt. I was a bit annoyed by that.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, the speech, I think, was enough here. As he goes, I am not a puss-ass bitch. I am not a rat. I don't know if some people said I was a rat, but I want you to know that I am not, and that I am coming for some people, and I'm working with others. And just go ahead and try to get me out of here, because you can't do it. Like, this guy is so high on himself because he just won like a tiny little dodgeball match. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really funny to watch the egos just inflate so fast and so high.
Oh, glorious. It's glorious. Thank you for casting these idiots, Audrey. I love it. I love the egos. I'm here for it. I was here for the speech. I was here for Tori in the confessional saying that he was so extra because he was. And I feel like he needed to give a speech. Like, he was pulled into there. Like, I think he was pulled in there unfairly. Jordan was all mad at him. I still don't understand Jordan's reason for being mad at Kevin. Again, it had something to do with the fact that he waited until he had safety to pull him in and say something, and he said something about something that he didn't know about. He saw his thing light up in his pocket.
Jess put it in his mind that it was Kevin that ratted him out.
Yeah, that's right. And Jess, credit for that, as I did last week. However, I feel like that Jordan sort of filled in all the blanks himself. Like, all the stuff he said was just like nonsense stuff that Jess never said. So she started him down that path. And then, like, he was just like, and you did this, and you did this, but none of it made sense. I don't understand why he's mad at him. Like, he's just playing the game. He's playing the game just like you're playing the game. What are you mad about?
Well, but, Brent, I had a whole thing last podcast where I explained all of this, so I don't know if you remember that, but...
I remember. Like, I get it, but it's totally nonsensical to me.
Well, yeah, so I mean, I wouldn't say unfairly. I think that Kevin was called in because of his presence in there. Jess saw it. She wanted him out. She made a move, and it worked because of that presence as well, I think. He does manage to come back in, though. And while I think this was a speech that did induce some level of in me in terms of embarrassment watching him, I do think it actually can can pay off a little bit here. It's kind of the Judd move.
I agree.
The more outspoken you are, the more aggressive you are. Again, this game favors the bold. I think he's been too bold, but he can't play anything else, and so he needs to lean into it. That's what he's doing, and we didn't exactly see his name on anybody's mouth here in this episode, and I think that in part because he just came back from a battle match, but you also play that up when you make a big speech like this, and you're essentially like, come on, any comers.
Yeah,
the perception is reality in these games, and that's creating a perception.
It is, and I feel like the fact, like, especially on a show like this, Kevin is such a loud, boisterous presence. If you are a better player, if you are any sort of a player whatsoever, you do not want to go after him, because he's going to find out, most likely, that you're going after him. And when he finds out, he's going to call you out, and you do not want to be called out by him, because he is a loud presence. I feel like that the fear of being one of Kevin's targets weighs heavy on some of these people, or the target of anybody with a big mouth in the house. So Kevin's certainly one of them. So I would not want, if I was a better player, I would not want to be the target of Kevin's ire, because then that just gets my name more out there. Similarly to what happened to Hunter later in this episode when Brayden called out Hunter and then he went wild. So, I feel like that there is some validity to it, that strategy.
Yes. So then they are introduced to the new twist here. They're going to be in pairs. They pick little thingies out of a envelope.
Pick a buff. A
buff. And they have to match the color. There's two of the same color for each pair, and they get paired off here. A lot of them were, I think, pleased with the pairings, but a couple were not. And immediately the person who is least happy, of course, was Brayden getting paired off with Dina. He very quickly was like, this is not good.
Yeah, it's not good. He realized it right away. And if he didn't realize it right away, he realized it instantly after he overheard the four girls talking up in the bedroom. I will give a quick rundown of everybody who got paired with everybody. So Cameron and Zach, he's apparently on the show.
I love that Cameron in her confessional was like, this guy can speak? I was like, yes, that's exactly what I've been thinking.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, just since we're on Zach and we're likely not to come back to him, I think that Audrey is hitting it out of the park with the cast here. But my God, this is a miss. Like, what the hell were you thinking putting this guy on television? He is an absolute snooze. There is nothing. I'm getting nothing from him. Him and Ty, I feel like, my opinion only, not Taryn's, mine, that they were miscast, that they don't belong on television, that they're not inspiring, they're not funny, they don't drive me crazy, they're just boring. They're just boring. And apparently, if you listen to the people from Big Brother 20, that is the worst thing that you can say about people. So, Taryn, I'm not living from what I'm getting from Zach and Ty. I feel like both of them do not belong on a television or anywhere near it. The only thing they belong near a television is moving it. That is it.
All right. Well, I've enjoyed Ty. I feel like he's the kind of player who is playing quietly right now, but is capable of playing a louder game if necessary. I feel like if he does end up staying for the next episode, for the next few rounds or so, I feel like we might get some more from him now that he's been called into a battle match.
Possibly.
But I am with you with Zach here for the most part. Although, again, really anybody is capable of stepping up once they're called out. I feel like Zach has some sort of like he's got some bro in him that might be like, oh, how dare you.
I have more to say about that when we get to him.
Like Drew, though, where like Drew is kind of essentially gone back into the background a little bit here. He gets his information from Drew, secret information.
Secretly, although he just told Cameron that he gets his information from Drew, but then he tells us in confessional, I get it secretly from Drew. Yeah.
Feel like he seems like he's got a decent handle on the game, and I feel like he's been trying to play smart. Didn't work out for him this round, though.
Yeah, well, I feel like that was more of a credit of circumstance than anything. I think that, well, we'll get to it, but I feel like they were just looking for the weakest pair and they probably picked the weakest guy, and he's probably the weakest guy. I mean, you can make an argument that he is at least the weakest guy. So, as I said, Cameron and Zach are together. Jayla and Dustin, who Jayla has had confessionals out the wazoo, basically didn't hear from her this episode. Tori and Thomas are together. Thomas continues, by the way, as we're on Thomas, and we likely won't talk about him a whole lot much more, annoys the living shit out of me. I don't know why that he particularly annoys me. He's just a weasel. He was talking about in this episode, like, well, it worked. Like I had to get the target off me, and it worked, by the way. And I'm like, bitch, there is no evidence that you were the target. Like, it was honestly, Taryn, like, he was standing in a group of people, and they were just chatting, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, like, three beats go by, and he's like, okay, I'm in an alliance. Okay, well, stop badgering me. And they're looking at him like, okay, I guess? Like, it was nonsensical. I don't understand what he was doing here. There's no evidence that anybody was ever going to vote for him, besides the fact that he was wearing a red jersey. The minute he got a jersey, he lost his freaking mind. So, yeah.
Well, here's the thing. There's two ways that you can try to take credit for things in confessionals. One way is where you start explaining something like you know what you're talking about, like what I'm doing right now and what Braden did in that episode. The other way is to say, hey, I know about this show. I did things that were good. I'm a good podcaster, right? I think you can tell which one's better.
I suppose, but I don't know why. Like, as I said on Twitter, you can't be that good looking and be that big of a weasel. Like, it just annoys me. Like his allies trusted him, as far as I could tell. I had no bad words to say about him, and he just like chucked them under the bus for no apparent reason whatsoever. He's talking about, yeah, now I'm at the bottom and I have to rebuild, and I'm like, well, whose fault is that? Like, because I feel like it's kind of his fault. So whatever. I mean, like, show me more is what I was what I'm saying to Thomas. But I haven't bought any of his gameplay thus far.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's doing all right here. It seems like he is decently positioned at the moment. But I feel like that he's got a reputation now for being somebody that rats people out, that opens his mouth.
Yep.
That's definitely not going to serve him too well. But he does seem to have gotten in with Tori and Cameron a bit here, and I do like where they are in the game. At least right now, I like Cameron a lot. I think she's got her head on right. I think that Tori has been playing pretty well for the most part here. I feel like she's maybe a little too out in front. I feel like there's a downfall coming there, but that's sort of why I like where Cameron is, because I don't think she will go down with that ship, or at least I don't anticipate that it would.
Right.
Look, anything can happen in this game. So
anything can happen in this game. But like, you can only put yourself in the best position.
Yeah,
you can put yourself in the best position possible. I concur with your assessment of Cameron that she is giving me. Look, here's the thing. She's playing mostly quietly, but she's giving me great confessionals. And when she is talking with people, she's entertaining. She's got energy and passion to her. Like, that's all I ask. I don't act like I'm not asking someone like, Ty to be out in front of everybody like Kevin and giving speeches left and right. But God, you're on a show where the prize is $2,500 at the end and the title of winner of Sequester of Season 3. Play with a little bit more fire in you, for God's sake. Anyway, the rest of the pairings are Christine and Ty, Drew and Erica, which I thought was a really interesting pairing, Dina and Braden, as we talked about, Hunter and Jessica, and Kevin and Kristen. So those are the eight pairs that we have for this episode, and they must all vote together. They must all be eliminated together. And as we will find out later in this episode, unlike the previous rounds in the early going here for pre-jury, once you are voted out, you are not out this round. You are going to have an opportunity to pick another pair that remains in the game and battle them for safety. So unlike the previous couple rounds where once you're voted out, you're out, this time around, you actually had an opportunity to come back. And by the way, I did have a rule question that I asked Audrey. So just to FYI, oops, I dropped my microphone. I've done that before. So the way you have to do this is where there's only eight votes. So there's only eight pairs and every pair has one vote. If a pair decided that they did not want to for the same person, they had to agree some pair to vote for, because if they did not vote for the same person, they would be the person that is eliminated. So, for instance, we're going to see quickly in this episode that Kristen and Kevin cannot agree. Kevin does not want to vote for Drew and Erica because he is aligned with them. Kristen, on the other hand, doesn't want to vote for Braden and Dina because she's aligned with them and doesn't want to throw them under the bus. So they have to vote for somebody and they have to agree to it. They end up deciding to toss their vote away and vote for Jayla and Dustin, who were That was the only part of this episode where they were relevant. So that's what happened, and that's why the people had to agree on who to vote for.
Okay, so I was curious also about how an LOS would work in this round. Let's say that, you know, that Brayden and Dina had decided to choose Zach and Jess.
Zach and Cameron.
Yes.
Yeah.
Zach was the important one here because he's got the LOS. If they decided right, exactly, to choose the team that Zach was on and he had the LOS, could he have kept his team? Could he have kept Cameron safe with his LOS?
Yeah, I mean, they were treated as a pair. I do not ask Audrey this just because I was pretty sure, and I know that they're in the chat so they can answer as I'm vamping here, but I'm reasonably confident that if Zach had been targeted and he was able to pull out his LOS, that would qualify for the pair. I see Sam, who's on the production staff. He says duo is equal one person, LOS qualifies for the pair. So if Zach had been chosen for the battle match here, he could have, if he wished, he didn't have to, remember, he could save it, but he can play his LOS and save them both from the battle match. So that would have worked.
So Zach was with Cameron, but didn't Cameron vote for Drew and Dina? Or am I remembering that wrong?
No, Cameron, you're remembering that wrong. Cameron, and by the way, just FYI, the vote totals are now being... Yes. Well, Jess voted for... I don't know. What is your question again? Who voted for who?
Yeah, I just got lost on who voted for who at this point.
That's okay. Zach and Cameron voted in the majority. They voted for Brayden and Dean. I wanted to say quickly that the vote totals are now being released. I campaigned for this, and I'm glad that they made this change. The vote totals are being released at the end of the episode. If you want to know who voted for who, just go to the end of the episode, and you can see exactly a chart of who voted for who. So in the case that you were talking about, Zach and Cameron did throw their vote on Dina and Brayden.
Oh, well, is Audrey said Cameron and Zach voted for Drew and Erica.
Cameron and Zach voted for Drew and Erica? That is not what it said at the end of the episode. I have the picture right here.
Tracy said Cameron and Zach voted for Brayden and Dina.
I mean, like, I'm looking at the picture, and it says voted for Brayden and Dina, and it's Cameron and Zach, and they were part of a five-person majority that created
Audrey
that.
Audrey said oops. Audrey made the same mistake I did. This is definitely a great change to see the vote totals afterward. I immediately paused it and I was like, oh yes, finally, like I can see what happened. This was very, very necessary, I think, and really improved it. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes. It's one thing to hear me say it on a podcast, but it's another thing for you to actually be able to see it and to see the pictures and to see, okay, these people were working together. These people are aligned together. We can get to it, but I thought that it was interesting who actually did vote for Drew and Erica in the end, because it wasn't just Dina and Brayden. There was actually another couple that did vote for Drew and Erica, and we'll talk about it.
Mm-hmm. I'm remembering that now. Because basically, like for me, like by the time the next episode comes around, like the mysteries and the questions I had from the previous episode, forgotten them, don't care as much. Getting some of the explanation here right away, I was like, thank you. Now I like have some context to understand what just went down, and I can try and fill in the blanks as to why in my head. I definitely appreciated it.
I know that sequester, you know, when this started online and they used to, you know, everything was anonymous back then. And so they didn't show anything. And then now it's moved into a live setting. And I think, you know, I don't even think they released the vote totals or the vote chart until the end of the season, last season for season two, mainly because I think that the producers or Audrey was worried about spoilers or like people linking people together and possibly seeing foreshadowing of who's with who. But as I explained to anybody who will listen, like this is a part of reality television nowadays. You can't have a reality television where people don't see who's voting with who. You have to be able to understand that in order to appreciate the story that's to come or the downfall that's to come, either way. But we have to be able to understand who's working with who and who has a relationship with who. It's just a necessary part of reality TV. I'm glad they made the change.
Mm-hmm. So they're in the pairs. It's time to strategize. And like we said, very quickly, everybody sees what Brayden saw, that Brayden and Dina are the stock pick here, that you want them in the battle match. They're the weakest team, seemingly. I still think that people are dramatically overestimating the, you know, what physical presence will do for you in these challenges.
I agree.
But doesn't really matter when it's to your benefit, right? So, you know, oh, well, if Braden and Dean are going to go in there, that's not me. That's great for me. Let's go along with it. And that seems to be the line of the day, that they were the easy pick here. And Braden very quickly sort of understood that this was happening and needed to counter it somehow. And so he concocted a plan. First, he confronted Jayla and some of the others that he either overheard or just assumed were talking about him. That didn't really seem
Jessica,
to do much.
Jessica, Christine, Tori, I think they were in there, yeah.
Yeah. And then he ends up coming up with this plan that he's going to call out Hunter and Jess.
Yeah, Hunter and Jess are together. Yeah, but Hunter was the main part. That's the only reason why you're remembering Hunter, because just like with Zach and Cameron, it's the important part of the pair. And I don't mean that Jessica is important, but particularly for Braden's argument, he's looking for a pussy bitch, as he says, I think, in his confessional, and he's looking for a patsy. And he needs one, and he found one in Hunter. I thought it was interesting how, look, and I just want to give props to Braden. I know he's going to get eliminated here by the vote, but he was able to move a few hearts and minds, which I was really thankful for, because it looked like a really easy vote from everyone else's point of view. Remember, they have like an hour at most to strategize and talk with each other and then get to the vote, because then the next 3-4 hours, at least in the early going here, are all consumed by production and confessionals, and then they reveal it, and then they have the battle match. And like, I mean, there's not a lot of time. It's not like Big Brother where you have a week. It's not even like Big Brother where you have like a day. You have like an hour. And Braden quickly realized something which I thought was really important before he even gets to the part about the plan with Hunter, is to tell Christine and other people, hey, this is actually a really bad call on your part to vote for me and Dina, because we are voted out. We could target any one of you. And this is foreshadowing for Christine, who eventually will get pulled into the battle match here. He's like, we can target anybody because you guys voted for us, because we're quote unquote the weakest. And obviously we have our druthers about who we would rather vote battle or not. However, if you target somebody else like Drew and Erica, you know that they are going to pick us because we are the weakest. So it would behoove you not to vote for us. Let us be up on the board as somebody to be selected for the battle match and vote somebody else out. Again, thought it was a brilliant plan. It should have worked if these people were playing with any sense whatsoever. I think maybe he got a little bit unlucky with some of the pairs. Obviously, Zach is with Cameron. Even if Cameron wanted to make the move, I don't think that Zach would have been on board for voting for Drew and Erica, because he said Drew was his secret boy who gets information from. Also, Kevin is with Kristen, and you saw that they were instantly at odds about who they wanted to vote for. So I don't know that Braden would have been able to cobble together the votes to get Drew and Erica out here. But I think that there was a potential for this plan to work. I don't know what the Jayla and Dustin were doing for voting for Braden and Dina. I don't know how that helped Jayla's game to get Braden and Dina out. Why aren't you getting rid of Drew and Erica here, honey? I just don't understand them. Tori and Thomas the same way, but I don't know what the hell Thomas is doing. I think Thomas at this point is doing whatever Tori tells him to do. And there was one more pair here I'm forgetting, but I'm sure will come back to me as I quickly find the... anyway, there was another pair that should have done this, but they didn't. Oh, Christine and Ty. Christine, Ty is like telling Braden the entire time, I'm not going to vote for you. I swear I'm not going to vote for you. He even tells Jessica, I'm not going to vote for Braden, because she's like, she goes to Braden later on and says, hey, I talked to Ty. He wouldn't tell me who he's voting for, but he said he's not voting for you. But that wasn't true. He was voting for him, and Christine was voting for them. So I was really, really annoyed by their strategic mind here. Like, I mean, Braden basically told you, Christine, it's a bad idea to vote for us, and then you still did. So why did you? Anyway, so let's get to the plan.
Yeah, well,
I mean, like, here's the thing. He didn't even need the plan, Taryn. Like, I know he's going to come up with a plan, and the plan is great, and I love the plan, but he didn't need the plan. If these people were freaking smart, they would have realized that what Braden said was true, which is that it's a bad idea to vote for them, because then they could pick anybody. You should vote for, like, anybody else besides them to leave them up on the board so that they will be the person that is selected for the battle match. Like, that's all he needed to say, and they should have been like, oh, yeah, that's what we should do. But no, they're all idiots. So whatever. Let's talk about the plan.
All right. Well, he recognizes that the majority is against him. Seemingly only Jayla and Ty's teams, or sorry, Jayla. Or no, Jayla was voted that way. Who's the one that?
Jessica and Hunter are the ones that are going to eventually flip their vote.
Kristen and Kevin and Ty, yes. Christine, those were the two pairs that were not voting for his team at this point, seemingly.
Right.
All of the other teams are voting his team out at this point. And so he decides he's going to come up with this plan. His plan is, he says, look, there are two ways that you can approach people when you are at the bottom. You can use power. You can use chaos. He can't use power. So he's going with chaos. I like this. I like that he's recognizing that he can't just go around saying a name. I think that's a correct read here. His way to do this is he's going to call out Hunter in front of everyone. He's hoping that Hunter will freak out and start scrambling. That does happen a bit, but the problem here is that Hunter is going to scramble right back to Brayden, and so it doesn't really go outward. It just kind of stays in, and he does flipping.
Yeah, he scrambles to Dina. That was the other issue, which is Brayden's partner here, who, again, if you listen to me on Twitter, I was like, Dina, just shut the F up. Like, what are you doing here? Like, let Brayden work. Just hush. Sit there and be quiet. Sit. Boo-boo, sit.
Well, see, the problem here is that instead of Hunter and Jessica running around trying to get the vote off of Brayden and Dina because they're worried that they'll pick them for the battle match, they just went straight back to Dina and Brayden to be like, don't throw us in. We will vote with you. So he did manage to flip them, which was good, but that was the only pair that ended up voting with him in the end. He didn't even get Ty. He did approach Ty and said, look, hey, I was doing this. I had to do what I had to do. But look, just vote Drew and Erica and everything's going to be fine. Also reminding him, if I go in, though, I won't pick you, which I did not love here. It obviously gave Ty a lot of incentive to throw Brayden in there, which he ultimately did.
Yeah, don't say that. If I ever went on Sequester, I would never, ever, ever tell anybody I will not pick you for the battle match. Like, that does the opposite of what you're just the only time that I feel like Brayden stubbed his toe where he was like, if you say that to somebody, that just gives them incentive to vote you out because you just were like, well, they told me that they wouldn't pick me for the battle match. So obviously I'm going to get rid of them here if push comes to shove. So not a good call. So I don't know what he was thinking there.
Long-term allies are not worth much in this game. Surviving round to round is more important than holding on to somebody that might work with you later on, and they might just as easily backstab you in the same round, as we just saw. So telling somebody that you're not going to choose them for the battle match, if you're doing that equation in your head and you're saying, look, I can stay loyal and vote for somebody that's not them, maybe somebody like Drew and Erica, let's say that even works, then I am at risk of being chosen for a battle match as one of the two weaker teams in this match, in this round. Or I can backstab my ally and basically guarantee that I'm not chosen because he's promising that he's not going to pick me and there's not really any strategic reason for him to do that unless it's true. He's going to go with that one. And it's what I would do as well. Like, wow. I think anybody should do it. If somebody tells you they're not going to pick you, that's you just immediately like, well, sorry, then probably.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Bye. Yeah, I don't know what he was thinking, but it was a moment of weakness in a fawn of wonderful gameplay on his part. And I was tweeting about this. I said, like, why are you not watching Sequester? Like, this is gameplay at its finest. I know it didn't work in the end, but I really felt like it should have. Again, if these people were using their heads, it should have worked. So frustrating to see a plan that you feel like should work, and it should work because the people who are playing would benefit from it, and then they don't listen to the person who's preaching the plan. That's just like, that's reality TV. When it drives me the craziest is when I see something like this. But I was more intrigued by how Brayden in a short amount of time was able to figure out quickly, this is what I need to say, this is what I need to show people, and this is what I need to basically threaten people with if I am going to survive this round, because he understood quickly that it doesn't matter whether or not you're pulled into the vote or the battle match. It's the same thing. It doesn't matter if you're voted off or you're pulled into the battle match. It literally is the same thing in this particular round and this round only. So the only way he's going to survive is to go for the Hail Mary of, I need to get the vote off me, and I need to make sure that I don't get pulled into the battle match, which is a really big ask in an hour time span.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a lot to accomplish. I don't think I'm quite as high on this this move as you are. I think that it was a valiant effort. I love that he was trying. I love the reasoning behind it. But it didn't really come all that close to working here. Unfortunately for him, that you know, the votes were really pretty lopsided here. He did not get many people on board. It didn't really seem like it affected much at all. Maybe flipped one vote, but also maybe flipped another one away from him. And then also, we don't even have confirmation that if it had worked, if he had gotten Drew and Erica into the vote, that they wouldn't have picked him for the reasoning that he used.
On that second point, I can say that Audrey did tweet this to somebody who had responded to something that I had tweeted, that Drew actually did confirm that if they were selected, and again, I don't know what Erica would have done, but Drew confirmed that it would have worked, that Brayden's plan would have worked if he had been voted out here. He would not have chosen Dina and Brayden. They actually would have gone for Tori and Thomas for a couple of reasons. He wants Tori out of the game, and he's fed up with Thomas. So I feel like that it would have worked. So the second part was working, but he couldn't get the first part, the actual votes there. I guess I take a different view of it than you. Maybe like it was 5-2-1, and the one was definitely not a vote that was like, it was Kristen and Kevin basically splitting their vote and having to throw their vote away was all that Brayden needed from them, because it turns what he would have needed, which is a 5-person majority, now he only needs a 4-person majority. So he basically got their vote, even though they voted for Jayla and Dustin, because now instead of needing 5 votes to get Drew and Erica out, he only needs 4 votes to get Drew and Erica out, because there's only 7 votes that are really in play. So that's where I'm coming from. I felt like that he got 2 pairs to do his bidding here. He just needed 2 more pairs to flip their votes. And it seemed like that Tori and Thomas were there. She wanted to make a big move. She talked about how she wanted to get Jayla out of the game, and she wanted to get Drew out of the game, and she doesn't trust Erica. Drew and Erica are sitting there on a freaking silver platter, Tori. What the hell are you waiting for? You've got a perfect opportunity right in front of you to do this. I don't know if she didn't want to do it because Cameron wasn't on board, and the reason Cameron wasn't on board was because she was with Zach, and Zach wouldn't do it. Again, a lot of moving parts here to take into consideration, but I really felt like I was annoyed that these people let an opportunity to get Drew and Erica out of the game fly by.
I'll first disagree that I don't think that Kristen and Kevin voting, throwing their vote away was a vote for them, because ultimately, like you said, he needed to flip 2 pairs. And if one of those two was Kristen and Kevin, then he would have only needed to flip 1 additional pair to at least tie the vote, which
yeah,
is,
but they're not
going to
go for a tie,
but that's a lot better than a 4-3-1 vote where he still goes home.
Yeah,
right,
that's fair. Yeah, I guess they both benefit him, but in different ways. Your way may be slightly better.
Slightly
more beneficial. Well,
it's a
you
lot
know
better.
I guess. I don't know. I'm trying to make no point here.
But that's sort of what I was saying. It didn't really seem like it came all that close. Even if Ty had gone with him, even if Kristen had gone with him, he would have needed to flip at least 1 other pair. He couldn't get Cameron and Zach. It would have needed to be, I think, Tori's pair.
Tori and Thomas or Jayla and Dustin. Those were the 2 pairs. Again, what the hell are you doing?
Right. And it did seem like they were anxious to do this, that they wanted these people out. That's why it felt like it could work. But what I'm guessing here is that the plan maybe had legs, but just didn't have enough time to work out, because it didn't seem like the Cameron, Tori, Thomas group even really heard that this was happening and was a possibility that, essentially he needed Hunter and Jess to be the people to go to Tori and Cameron and be like, hey, there's a potential plan here in the works to go after Drew and Erica. I feel like if that had happened, then it maybe would have worked, that maybe then they would have been able to get on board, but there just maybe wasn't enough time. So, like I said, I like the attempt. I like that. I like the reasoning behind it. It maybe theoretically could have worked, especially hearing the confirmation that Drew would not have chosen him in the battle match situation. That definitely adds some credibility to it. But I do also think that there were some negatives to this plan. One was obviously telling Ty that he was safe, which is a completely unnecessary risk, but also in publicly calling out Hunter, you did manage to flip him. Hunter and Jess did flip over, but they didn't exactly campaign for Brayden. And now that he's publicly called them out, he can no longer use the threat of I could choose anybody, because now everybody thinks that he's choosing Hunter and Jess, and that makes them feel more secure in the vote. And so now there's less incentive. And honestly, what you said at the start was what I was thinking throughout most of this, which was his initial argument was actually pretty good. If he calls everybody in and says, look, if you put me in, then I could choose any one of you. I'm not choosing some of you, and you know who you are. But some of you are available for me to choose, and those are the people that I'm going to choose. I'm not going to choose based on who I think I can beat. I'm just going to choose who
I
really
want to choose.
That's
a really way to play it. Because it instantly puts the paranoia into them that, oh my God, he hasn't told me that I'm not one of the people that he's not choosing. You know what I mean? Right. So, yeah, then you start to think, yeah, I like that play. I like that play.
Right. And again, in the argument also makes sense, especially now that, you know, oh man, now there's like, if we do this, it could be us that gets pulled in. Whereas we do want to make this move on Drew and Erica. I feel like it gives a little more incentive to go ahead and do that more naturally for people. And look, I think either way, this could have worked, could have failed. I'm not going to, you know, say that he should have done this or he shouldn't have done what he did. I think that he made an attempt. It didn't work. Maybe it could have worked, but I do think there were some negatives to it that I didn't really see anybody talking about. So, like I said, I liked the plan. It was fun to watch, and honestly,
really fun to watch.
I do hope that Brayden stays, because I want to see more of this on the show.
Oh my God! Like I don't want to speak for the audience, but like everybody in my household's rooting for Brayden and Dina here. Like they're like. They're so fun. Like Brayden's so great. Dina's so hilarious. Like I've gotten absolutely nothing from Ty. I told Christine on Twitter she's collateral damage. Like I enjoy Christine, but she's not a massive personality. She seems like she has a lot of great relationships in the house. I think Ty even said something about the fact that I like being paired with her because she has a lot of anchors or a lot of her tentacles in other people. Like, a lot of people seem to enjoy Christine's company. But she's not giving me a lot of great television, but that doesn't, you know, like, as long as you play good gameplay, I don't necessarily mind that you don't give me good television, but at least give me good confessionals. And that's when I tend to get a little ranty like I do with Zach. So whatever.
Now we are going to take a quick break for our sponsors and we'll be right back. And we're back. So let's get back to the show.
Anyway, so as we move along in this episode, as we found out the plan didn't work, they are going to eventually have to pull somebody into a battle match, Brayden and Dina. And this is where we get the iconic line from Dina saying, I don't care. I will pop a tit to win this thing. I just don't care. Alliances, friendships, who cares? They're all out the window. Who do you want to go for? Drayden.
Yeah, that's absolutely the correct way of thinking. They're a day into this thing. Like, there are no friendships or alliances that are worth picking somebody that's potentially harder to beat. Again, even accounting for the fact that you probably can't exactly know who's easier to beat. I do feel like this was the smarter choice here because Brayden, as you were saying, says, Ty and Christine, this is probably easiest.
If there's any amount of physicality whatsoever, let's at least pick what ostensibly is the weakest guy in Ty that's remaining on the board. So at least we'll be a little bit more balanced. So that's what they end up going with. And of course, as per usual on the show, the people that are picked for the battle match are so indignant, Terrence. They are just besides themselves. They are aghast. How dare you?
You're going to lose the game now. Yes. Nobody's ever going to trust you again.
Like, no one will trust you ever. They will continue to come for you and blah, blah, blah. And
I will be avenged.
he says to Brayden I can't believe you did this, dude. I was on your side. He's like, and of course Brayden is like, well, we ended up here. And Ty's like, well, I don't know how that happened. I don't know. And I have to say, I take issue with this here. Okay, for a variety of reasons. First of all, as we see at the end of the episode, Ty and Christine did vote for Dina and Brayden. They are lying through their teeth when this happens. Okay, I have a major issue with this for entertainment purposes and for strategy purposes. Let's talk about the strategy purposes first. So you're telling everybody in front of everybody to Brayden and Dina, hey, I don't know what happened. I didn't vote for you, but yet. That is a lie. You did.
Wait, they're
for
lying
them.
In a game?
Yes, which is fine, but it has to be a useful lie, Taryn. There is no purpose to this lie. You might as well own your shit in front of them, because if you tell them to their, first of all, you've already been selected for the battle match. You can't change it now, okay? So you've been selected. You might as well tell them the truth, because if you lie, you're telling everybody in front of them, okay, look, I didn't actually vote for you, but all of these people who were over here, they expected that you did vote for them. So now, even if you win the battle match, you're going to have to go back to them and say, look, when I, you know, hey, obviously I was, lying there. I was, I actually did vote for Dina and Brayden, because they're going to wonder, well, who did you vote for? You said you were going to vote for Dina and Brayden and you didn't. So they want to know. So if you go to them and say, look, actually, I really did vote for Dina and Brayden. I was just telling you guys that. Then the next time that you say that lie about, hey, I didn't vote for you, or I'm not going to vote for you, no one's going to believe you. Like, your credibility is just shot. I feel like at that point, you've been pulled into the battle match. You cannot change your fate. You are much better off just saying, you know what, bitch? I did vote for your ass. I'm going to own my shit. You know what? I voted for your ass. Sorry about it. Let's go. Like, why not do that? I feel like you earn more credibility with the audience, more credibility with the people who are playing in the game, and it makes for better television rather than acting totally indignant when you have no place in doing so. Rant over.
Nah, I'm with you on this one. Especially because in this instance in particular, he is facing off against Brayden and Dina, the people he's trying to convince. So either he wins and stays in the game and they're gone and no longer need yep. to be convinced, or he loses and goes to the pre-jury without Brayden and Dina, and so it doesn't exactly help him there either. Yep. So it's not great, and not that this even would help him necessarily, because it's not like he's being like, oh, but I was on your side, bro. How could you do this to me? It's like, screw you, then I'm never believing you again. let's just be clear here. This is not strategic in any way. This nope. is just an emotional reaction. Yep. One that I think many people have. They raise their walls. They get defensive. No, this wasn't my fault. How dare you? This is your fault. I'm the victim. How could you? You're going to lose because you're just the worst. We see this with fans all the time when they watch people play the game. This That's is a fan's true. Response yeah. to seeing something like this. When somebody betrays your favorite, you're like, oh, how could they? That's the worst move they ever could have done.
Well, anyway, so I ranted about Ty. They're going to go off into the battle match. As I said, everybody in this household is rooting for Brayden and Dina, or Drayden, as I will call them. It was really tough to see them get pulled into the vote here and obviously into the battle match. I mean, they're not out yet, but it feels like they're out. I am really, really psyched for them to win, much like I was for Kevin to win. I feel like that this is a different instance, though. It's not like Ty and Christine necessarily did anything wrong to be eliminated here. It's just that I feel like that Brayden and Dina make infinitely better television, and the show is much better if they stay in. So we'll see, but I'm worried, Taryn. I'm worried about our boy Brayden. My boy Brayden.
I kind of wanted the battle match here because we didn't get anybody actually leaving this one.
Yeah.
But it felt like there was time for it. Ultimately, you know, we're going to get where we're going to get here. And so we'll see that battle match in the start of the next episode. I do feel like I've lost some of the momentum, though. Hopefully we get enough of it back by the time we start up on the next episode. But after this happens, they walk away, and we're going to get, essentially, and I love this, an explanation here as to, like, hey, for those that don't know, there will be a buyback halfway through the season. And so these people in the pre-jury, what they're doing matters, and they are currently strategizing, socializing, yelling at each other and insulting each other, I guess, is also what they're actually doing. And we're going to get a clip from this pre-jury shed house.
Oh, yeah. This is the place where I did all my interviews. This is like a, yeah, it's above the garage. Yeah, this was, I did my interviews like on the other side of the room where they were like, where the camera person was basically is where I was. So, they were all up there and they were talking, and Kimberly is freaking nuts, man. She's just lost her damn mind. This was cringeworthy.
Can you, because I could not follow this. I don't know what she was yelling about, and I was wondering if you did.
I don't really know what she's yelling about. My understanding after watching the episode is that she and everybody in there thinks that Circle is coming. Circle was, as the show made a note of, the game that happened for the pre-jury buyback challenge last year, where the contestants are in a circle and one by one they vote everybody out by creating a majority of alliance every round to round until only like one person is left and that person came back into the game. So it really helps the people to have stronger relationships, and that's what they're all counting on. Like, I don't know if I was in the game if I would think that Circle is coming. But I would have to think, okay, this is a very riggable challenge for the pre-jury, especially if you come into the jury early. I'm betting that the producers aren't going to throw this one at the contestants again. Like, if I was in there, I would not count on Circle or any sort of strategy-based game happening again. I would think it's going to be something else, something more akin to an actual battle match that they were thinking of the first time. I remember DJ in the second season, he got voted off. He's like, no one's going to beat me in a battle match. And, you know, little does he know, it's like, you know, nothing that you're even preparing for. It's like, it has nothing to do with physical ability or willpower or anything like that. So I don't know, but I think that she thinks that some version of Circle is coming where she's trying to use Matt as her eyes and ears to like see what relationship that Mary Payton and Jordan have. But from all I could tell, it just looked like she was annoying the living shit out of people, being totally insincere. Like, it seemed like she was being extra for the purpose of television and television alone, which is to me the worst kind of extra. And it also felt like that I still had it called right from day one. Oh, hi, Chuck. I see you in the chat. Brent called it day one, beauty jealousy. Why would you attack Mary Payton for her tracks and her weave and her makeup and her beat if you weren't jealous as fuck of her? Like, what is she doing here, Taryn?
Yeah, this gave me some Pop and Paul flashbacks. I've got to be the villain. That she was talking to the camera, like, hey, I'm going to do this. Like, this is like a weird look in her eye. Like, she's just lost all connection to humanity. I was very confused about what this was, what was happening. She was like listening in and she was like, this is all according to plan. It's like that I'm listening in and that he's my eyes and I'm the ears. And it's like, why is this a plan? I don't know what is happening. Overhearing that Jordan's talking about you. I'm very confused about this. And so then she enters and she's just like throwing it out. It's Barbie who I don't know what she said, and then Jordan who talks too much and can't keep his mouth closed. And it's like, what is this? What's happening?
All I can say is that it just feels like somebody who was like flew down on their own dime to go play this game. The worst scenario happened. You got eliminated. First off, you're literally the first boot of your season. Out of all three people there, they hated your ass the most. They got rid of you the first episode. And that's not really what happened because only two people voted for her. But still, she was eliminated. The first vote, she's gone. Girl, bye. And now she's mad. And she wants a little bit more TV time. Like, this isn't what she signed up for, Taryn. She signed up to have more TV time than what she was apparently promised, and she's not getting it. So she's going to make her own TV time by calling Mary Payton a, you know, low rent Barbie doll or whatever the hell she said, and, you know, attacking her looks. And yeah, it was, like I said, it was cringe. It was really cringe. I don't know anybody who watched this who actually enjoyed it. Maybe the audience did. Maybe the chat. If you guys enjoyed it, you can tell me in the chat. Maybe I'm not giving Kim enough credit here, but I yeah, I didn't care for it.
I think I would have enjoyed it more if I understood it more. It was really just, okay. It was really just like, and hey, look what's going on over here. Ah! What? Why? But yeah, I mean, she finally reveals the true reason that I put you in the battle match was because I also knew about your alliance. Which one? I don't understand. I thought you'd be easier to beat in the thing. So, like, oh, so the thing totally, that we just assumed.
Yeah, which we assumed, and you went back on that in the second episode, and you said that that's not the reason why I picked you. I picked you because I thought you were strong. Which is it? Because you do yoga. Remember, that was the whole reason. You do yoga. I thought you could beat him if it was some agility challenge or whatever. So, whatever, woman.
Yeah, like,
you're crazy, Sean.
Again, when you're taking credit for things, there's two ways to do it. And the second way, the way that doesn't work, is after you've had a night to sleep over it, you're like, you know, thinking about it, my true reason is... it's like, okay. So that was weird. And then, yeah, the insults, the weave stuff and the makeup, like, that was like, what are we doing here? That was uncalled for. I did not appreciate that.
Yeah, see, and I also read stuff in the chat that is not necessarily supportive of me. Ashley Jordan would like to remind me, Brent, I need to remind you of your winner pick. Yes. I picked Kimberly before I knew she was freaking nuts. That's what happened to Ashley. Like, she was like a serial killer. She put on a good face for me in the interview, and then like she lost her freaking mind.
I feel like I'm noticing a trend here with winner Kim. You picked Josh, who did win. I mean Jose. Jay West was your number two.
Yes, Jay West. He wasn't my number two. Oh, I said Tori was my number
top
two.
Guy.
But I said he was the best of the guys. That I remember that Sam, was a production member, texted me. He said, when you said, after, because he knows what happened on the season, when I said on RHAP that Jordan was the best of the male interviews, that and I had Kimberly as my winner pick. Audrey actually texted me and said, no, next season when you do your winner pick, she might want to run it by me and I'll, you know, nudge you in. I said, no. It just gives Taryn in the audience more to hang over me, so I asked for no help on that next season. So
yes, we'll and we have Kim from season two in the chat saying, can we call her Kimberly and me Kim? Thank you. Which is funny because at the start of the season, Kimberly was like, I want to make sure I'm differentiated from the original Kim.
She's and different,
now,
all right.
Now we're hearing it from the other end as well. So, yeah, there you go. That was the episode. It was definitely an interesting one.
It was. There are a couple questions that I've gotten in, some stuff I wanted to talk to you about. So someone had tweeted me basically about the fairness of the twist. From their point of view, the person on Twitter, I wish I had their name handy, but as usual, I do not have it. They were like, this twist just seemed designed to get out the four weakest people there, in that, like, there's going to pair and they were probably deemed the weakest. And then they were probably going to pick whoever was the weakest remaining. So, I mean, it felt, their opinion was that it felt unfair. I have also heard from other people who were like, look, this was really more a matter of fate, in that like Brayden and Dina didn't have to end up together. If Dina had ended up with somebody with more social capital rather than Brayden, then maybe her fate would have been different. But as it stands, I mean, we saw some of the beginnings here of the interpersonal relationships of people, and it didn't really look like Brayden and Dina had much social currency in the house. Like, there's definitely like a girl's bedroom with like Jayla and Jessica and Christine, and there's another bedroom with like Cameron and Tori and Erica, who has now moved in there, and then there's the guys' alliance. But I didn't understand, or I didn't see anybody that who was including Brayden and Dina in their plans besides Kristen, who, to her credit, did put her foot down and tried to save them and did what she could, but she also didn't have enough social capital. So, like, I'm just trying to state the other end of the argument, which is that it was not that the twist was unfair. It was simply the fact that fate dealt them a bad hand and they hadn't done any of the initial legwork that some other people had done. For instance, Ty and Christine were arguably a really weak pair, but because of Christine's social connections, nobody targeted them. So do you feel like the twist was inherently unfair, or do you feel like that it's just par for the course with the show?
I mean, I think it was mostly fair here. I mean, look, if it was designed to get out weaker players, that's fair. Weaker players have an inherent advantage at this portion of the game. And so if there's one round where they don't have an advantage, then you better have worked your social relationships up to this point to make sure you're okay for this. I think the one point that I wasn't super sold on was I would have preferred it to be completely random. It did seem like it was designed to pair up a man and a woman for each pair. I think that did, I think, lend it toward the pair with the weakest men was probably going to be seen as the weakest. That's seemingly what it was, that the bigger guys, like regardless of who you were paired with, were seemingly strong teams, and then the pair with the weaker guys were the weaker teams.
Yeah, I will say that Audrey did tell me that if Gina had been paired with another woman who had better social connections, like maybe Tori or Christine or Jayla, then she doesn't believe that Gina would have ended up in the vote or, you know, potentially picked, because they were viewed as an asset. Their social currency was strong within the house. And again, this is all, you know, short-term gameplay. Alliances don't mean squat, but there is something to be said for people being likable and wanting to work with people. And they were strong in the house, like people like Tori and Christine. So I agree with you in that it would have been more interesting. I feel like if it had been totally random, and then fate really would have got to dictate a little bit more, because then it would have been all about your social relationships and not just about who was the weakest guy. But, you know, I think their argument would be that Brayden also hadn't done the legwork to be able to protect himself if something like the worst case scenario happened, where there's a twist involved and you get paired with a really weak female and she doesn't have social relationships with people that she needs to have. Remember, Dina, this is only one day has passed game wise, and Dina was still recovering from that horrible first episode that she had, where she was basically non-responsive to people, and then spent the second episode, which is the second part of the day, trying to clean it up with some people and say, hey, I'm not antisocial, I'm actually a really good person. But then we saw Thomas and Kevin throwing Dina under the bus in this episode. So if ever they weren't going to get picked for the vote, I feel like that any chance they had of avoiding it was snuffed out by those two targeting her.
Yeah, Audrey says that it was male-female because of the battle match that is to come. It required that makeup. But that's kind of what I was talking about, where if I know that it had to be a male and a female, you know, I'm probably assuming that has something to do with the battle match, and that is kind of giving some credence to the idea that you want a stronger guy, because there's going to be a guy role. And so the guy is going to be going up against the guy. And so you're matching up the guys. And so I think it would lend toward the weaker guy. But again, this is a minor point, because the weaker guys, you had an advantage in the first few rounds. I think that, you know, ultimately, you know, people were, you know, not coming for somebody like Brayden or Ty because they weren't overtly threatening, and that worked against them in this round. And that's what Sequester should be, which is flipping things around on you all the time. You should never be able to feel comfortable in a role like that. And so ultimately, I'm pretty okay with it. I thought it was fine.
Yeah, I am too. And I think it's important to just to accent what you said, that the weaker guys definitely had an advantage early on in the season, because people like Kevin and Drew, it seems like their names are in everybody's mouths all of the time. Like the bigger, stronger, louder guys are always going to be more of a target than other people, and they're always going to want them out. So like, some twist like this that happens to put some of the weaker competitors on their back heel is totally fine with me and not unfair at all. So I know that Audrey takes fairness very seriously, and so I did want to put that out there. Also, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, it's a like Sequester is, I think, unfair to somebody in each round. Like, it's the unfairness is spread around. Like, that's sort of like the thing, is that based on fate in the game, you might run into this round, you're screwed based on the rules, just because of where you're positioned and what the rules happen to be. Like, that's just the way that the game is set up. And so you have to be able to survive the round that you're screwed in. That's just the way it goes.
Yeah, I agree. I did want to talk a little bit about Kristen as well. I mentioned her. She was the only person who was really working for Brayden and Dina. I didn't like the Yas Queen part of me was like happy that she was putting her foot down and making sure that Brayden and Dina were not targeted here. But I don't know that it was necessarily a thing to do. I would like your take on it. Like, she was basically F no to Kevin when he was like, I want to target Dina. And she was like, it's not happening. So she got her way because they had to agree on somebody. What did you think of that?
Actually, I liked this. She was safe this round, which is where the weaker people might be targeted. I think she's perceived as being weak. I think that this was a good look for her as like, hey, look, I am not only weak, but I am loyal. I am going to stand up for, you know, the people I'm with. And if those people also go home, guess who has nobody left? Guess who's a loyal, weak person that wants to be picked up by somebody because I no longer have anyone else in the game? Hey, it happens to be me. I liked this from her. I don't know how intentional that was. I did see her tearing up toward the end when obviously like all of her allies are in the battle match. Yeah, so that was probably a bit genuine in emotionally there from her. But I do think this is good for her. I think that, you know, the next round is probably not going to be one where they're looking for an easy, no blood target. I think they're going to be looking for big targets, and I don't think she's one of them. And I think she's going to be somebody that a lot of people look at as somebody that can be picked up, especially if Dina goes home. Then I think that she's in a good spot there based on what she did here. I think that if she tries to be sneaky and like, oh no, we'll vote out my ally, I don't know if that works as well for her. I think this is a good play actually.
I totally concur and I'm really happy to see that she was, you know what, I spent two episodes being relatively quiet here and I'm going to get out there. And I know that wasn't why she did it, but I was happy that she did. I also wanted to talk about two women who we didn't talk a ton about, Erica, who I'm actually really enjoying lately. And I don't know why. Like, I mean, my tastes are very fickle and, you know, I go with the wind sometimes. But Erica, I feel like, just wants to like find her people and just chill and have fun and vote the uncool people out. And I sort of like, it's a little Regina George to me where like I identify with her shallowness and she just wants to have fun and chill with the cool hot people. So I'm here for it, Erica.
I have to say, I loved the sequence of her being like, you know, I didn't want to do the girls thing, but I'm really starting to feel like comfortable. I feel like I've got my girls. And then immediately
you found
like,
your people. Oh, you found your people.
We hate her. We want her gone.
It was great, though. Loved it. Also, I want to give some props to Jessica. As we saw earlier in the episode, Hunter was paired with Jessica, and Hunter was the target. The patsy of Brayden there, and it was called out in an open forum. Hey, I'm voting for you and Jessica, Hunter. And we saw Hunter, like, you know, frantically going to Brayden and Dina saying, you know, hey, I won't vote for you. But I did like what I saw from Jessica here later in the episode. We saw her out in the garage talking with Brayden and Tori. There are a lot of people who I feel like that if they are targeted by somebody, they will be really defensive and ugly with them. And I really liked her style here where she was really unemotional about it. She was understanding that every cycle of the game is a new cycle and that I just have to deal with what's in front of me. And Brayden's not targeting me because he hates me. He's targeting me because he's trying to save his own ass. And I can stand an unemotional strategy queen. So Jessica, you're still doing good work out there.
Yeah, and they did completely the right thing here where they're called out by people who are likely going to be sent home. And so they're like, you know what? Hands in the air. You got us. We're with you. We will vote with you. And please don't pick us. And they did that. A lot of people were asking about Hunter and the fact that he voted for Erica. I would imagine this is part of the reason why the plan failed, because, again, Brayden needed Hunter and Jess to go and pitch Drew and Erica as a vote out option to the other people to actually get everybody on board to go do that. But again, they didn't have incentive to do that because now they were pretty sure that Brayden wasn't actually going to pick them. And I don't think Hunter actually wanted Erica to be voted out. I think that he was like, I mean, I don't think it's actually going to happen. So if I vote with them, we won't have the majority. They will be safe. We will be safe and it'll all be fine.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I was shocked when I saw at the end of the episode that Hunter had voted against Erica and Drew by association here. So that's about it. I think we are about ready to wrap it up. I do want to tell people that if you're not aware, My Weekly Meltdown, which is another podcast, is on YouTube. They actually do exit interviews with the contestants. And I know that their interview with Jay West was just uploaded a few minutes ago. Somebody let me know that. So you can go over there if you want to hear from Jay West. And I don't know what the hell he's going to say to justify this. I'm sure he's going to say it all lined up exactly. It worked out exactly how he wanted to, Taryn. You can go over there and hear what he has to say. But
you don't understand. He waited until he was immune, but he wasn't immune.
Yeah, I know. But he wasn't immune. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're pussy ass bitch. Yeah. How dare you?
All right. Well, that's what we have for you. Thank you so much for hanging out with us tonight. This was fun.
Yes, it was. As I said, sorry to interrupt you, but Taryn, honestly, best episode of the season. I know it's a new season. We're only three episodes in. I really felt like the first two episodes wasn't a lot of story there. It was more sort of just like we got from A to B to C. Kind of didn't know how we did it. Here, I really feel like I understood what happened. I understood how people were voted out. I understood what the decoy boot was and how they were almost voted out. I understood the interpersonal relationships with people. Like, Audrey, you're freaking killing it. And I love it. This is the first time I felt like I was watching season three, where I felt like when I watched season two, how much I was enjoying that. So my only gripe is that I have to wait for another week to find out what happens here. So we'll see. We'll see what happens to Braden and Dina.
We will see. Yes. And, you know, as we've talked about before, as the number of players start to dwindle, I think that the show will continue to get better and better as we get to know people more and there are fewer to follow. And I think things will be easier to follow in general. So looking forward to next week. Make sure you keep watchful eyes on the Sequester YouTube and this YouTube and all of the things.
One more thing. I did hear from Audrey that whatever twist is going to take place for next Sunday is going to be released later on this week. I don't know exactly when, but just stay on the lookout. You can go to @SequesterOfficial on Twitter if you want to follow their Twitter and find out any updates that are happening as far as the show goes. I don't know what the twist is, but I know they're going to announce elements of it ahead of time, or if not the whole damn thing. So be on the lookout for that.
Yes. All right. So thank you so much for joining us. You can find me on Twitter @ArmstrongTaryn, Twitch, twitch.tv/Taryn Armstrong, and Instagram, Taryn_Armstrong. Actually, was just on Twitch talking about the latest Survivor episode, which was pretty nuts.
That was great. Honestly, I watched that. You and Lita were on Twitch talking about the amazing back-to-back Survivor episodes that we got this past Wednesday. As you know, I hadn't watched a ton of Survivor, but I did watch some of it, and I watched this episode particularly, and then I watched the Twitch stream with Tara and Lita. Really great stuff on there. I really encourage everybody to check it out. Just some of the things that were said on there, I don't want to get into them now, but they were really things that made me think about my reactions to certain people, how I inherently treat other people differently without realizing it, or blame other people for things that I don't hold other people accountable for. And it was interesting to take a look at my own actions, myself, and just the people in general about how they reacted to what they saw in this episode. So kudos to you, Taryn. I wish that it was like a downloadable podcast kind of thing for more people to listen to. But just go to twitch.tv/TarynArmstrong to check it out.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to hear that was your reaction to it. It was
great.
Yeah, you know, we do our best here. It is something that needed to be talked about, I think. So, yes. All right. Thank you so much. Like I said, you can find Brent on Twitter @OneLuckyGay. And thanks for joining us.
Yep.
See you next time.